happy day.
Oh, happy day.
Oh, a happy day.
Oh, happy day.
When Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
Oh, when he wore.
Hello, this is KZFR. Hello, this is KZFR, Isaac Hempseed with Youth for Justice. We've got some guests in the studio right now. We're going to be talking about edible bugs in the future and how that will affect our youth. First, we'll get into a song and get going here.
Free, all I'd want is you to be my sweet honeybee. And if I was a tree growing tall and green, all I'd want is you to shade me and be my leaves. If I was a flower growing wild and free, all I'd want is you to be my sweet honeybee. And if I was a tree growing tall and green, all I'd want is you to shade me and be my leaves. All I want is you, will you be my bride? Take me by the hand and stand by my side. All I want is you, will you stay with me? Hold me in your arms and sway me like the sea. The rumble of your water would be my call. If you were the winter, I know I'd be the snow. Just as long as you're with me when the cold winds blow. All I want is you, will you be my bride? Take me by the hand and stand by my side. All I want is you, will you stay with me? Hold me in your arms and sway me like the sea. If you were a wink, I'd be a nod. If you were a seed, well, I'd be a pod. If you were a floor, I'd wanna be the rug. And if you were a kiss, I know I'd be a hug. All I want is you, will you be my bride? Take me by the hand and stand by my side. All I want is you, will you stay with me? Hold me in your arms and sway me like the sea. If you were the wood, I'd be the fire. If you were the love, I'd be the desire. If you were a castle, I'd be your moat. And if you were an ocean, I'd learn to float. All I want is you, will you be my bride? Take me by the hand and stand by my side. All I want is you, will you stay with me? Hold me in your arms and sway me like the sea.
That was Barry Lewis Polizar with All I Want Is You. And today we've got Steven back in the studio. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you doing, man?
I'm pretty good.
Thanks for having us in.
Heck yeah. And we also have Karen in studio. Hello, Karen.
Hey, how's it going?
Very good. And Nolan's back.
Hey, guys.
Yeah, what's up, Nolan?
Say that again.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
There we go. Cool. All right, so we have Steven back again because after his experience with CIDEAR, which is a nonprofit organization that goes into American cities and one international city to help youth in school learn to read and write, he got into something else. What was that, Steven?
And actually, the funny thing is I got into bugs before CIDEAR. It was we kind of laid a plan to try to promote the consumption of edible insects in the U.S. as a means to address the problems we see in our food systems and how unsustainable they are. But before I could launch into that project, I was committed to CIDEAR, which turned out to be an incredible experience on its own. And then once that finished up, I got to come out to Chico and start that project with bugs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a little confusing, but all for good. All
right. And then we have our other guest, Karen, in. She's been on one other time before.
Yes, I have.
And you are also a part of bug eating.
Yes,
can you tell us
about
that?
I've actually been highly involved in the bug eating society.
Okay.
For about 3 years now. And it all started after taking an entomology class and realizing that eating bugs is actually an amazing way to feed the world sustainably.
Oh. Just going to interject really quickly for being on a youth program and talking about solutions to justice issues. It often begins with education. As Karen mentioned, her fascination and her interest in bugs all began by taking a class. And I think anything that we're going to solve in this world is going to have to begin with a good dose of education, whether that be formal education or informal. But that's a real key thing just to keep in mind.
Thank you. So while we're looking at the youth benefits or aspects of eating bugs, what other aspects are there to eating bugs, I guess, like economically or...
So yeah, there's a lot, and that's the exciting thing about bugs and why we see it as such a real vital part of our future, because it not only is it a great source of nutritional value, but the environmental aspect of it and how it can be a real sustainable source of protein moving forward, as well as the economic benefits that it can produce. But I think we'll get into that in a little bit. I guess maybe we want to start with kind of just the broader framework of kind of how this may even apply to youth, because I think that might be a question, but looks like Nolan might have something for us.
Yeah, what's up, Nolan?
So I've brought up a list of like the kinds of bugs you cannot and cannot eat.
All right.
Like, but you have to catch them and cook them in a certain way first. Of course.
So you want to tell us about two of those bugs there, Nolan?
Sure.
All right.
So first up on the list is grasshoppers and crickets. Grasshoppers and crickets are extraordinarily protein rich, and you can collect them pretty much anywhere. Most types of grasshoppers and crickets are edible. If you're reading this from home, I'm quoting this directly from backpacker.com. Like, if you're reading this from home.
Yeah, if you're hearing this, yeah.
If you can try a store-bought food product called cricket powder or cricket flour. Cricket powder is very high in protein, has similar baking properties to regular flour, and has a slightly nutty flavor. If you do decide to go to the wild, remember, they can carry nematodes, so remember to cook them before you eat them.
All right.
There's a lesson for you, kids.
Thank you, Nolan. And we just had another guest come into the studio.
Hey, how's it going, Isaac?
How are you? Who are you?
my name is Addison Winslow. I don't really have much knowledge in particular about bugs, but I've lived in central Mexico for a while, and there you eat what's called chapulines, where the grasshoppers, you know, there's a certain way of preparing them. It's really, but they're like common as a snack. Like, you throw some hot sauce on them, and during a certain season, they're really cheap, so people just like walk around with buckets and selling them. They also make good tacos too. I can verify.
All right, so we also have another person who's pretty experienced in the bug eating realm.
Sounds like a cool experience out there.
Tasty tacos.
Yeah, I'd like to try those down in Mexico at some point.
All right. So, Steven, what do you want to get into next about eating bugs?
Yeah, so I think it might be important to kind of start with how bugs might apply to youth in a youth for justice program. And so it does so in maybe an indirect way, starting with the fact that we see bugs, and the United Nations and other organizations see bugs as a solution to the climate issue. The climate crisis that we're facing, and so climate justice really is something that should be a youth focus, because they are going to be the people who are going to be experiencing the worst of climate change in the future, and so addressing and fighting for climate justice should be a priority for youth. And so bugs kind of are a way to get towards climate justice, because they provide a sustainable option that can really improve our food systems. And moving forward, our climate is only going to be improved if we can improve our food systems. So didn't elaborate that very well, but essentially bugs will help us get towards a more sustainable climate, which is very much something that youth should be concerned with moving forward. And so with that, I think then maybe we can kind of get into how bugs are a solution and what solutions they provide. And that's, well, I'm going to let Karen kind of get into that, because again, she's more knowledgeable than I. I'm just kind of here to support. So yeah, I think they have a lot of different options, different ways. We know that they have a lot of different ways to beneficial. So
how are they more sustainable, Karen?
Oh, I can talk about this forever, but I know I have to make it short because we only have like an hour. So, well, let me start first going back to the word entomophagy, which is actually the word that you would use for the insect consumption.
Okay.
Specifically humans. You know, you might have heard insectivore for like the lizards and other birds and other kinds of animals, but for humans, we use entomophagy a bit more.
Entomophagy. Okay.
Yeah. So ento meaning bugs and phagy is the process of eating.
Okay.
So I guess there's like about three main reasons. One being the sustainability. Second being the health. And then the third, which Stephen kind of already touched based on it, is the socioeconomic, the livelihood, you know, how they can help communities grow, specifically those like women and children who are underrepresented. So sustainability, okay. So our agriculture, there's something terribly wrong with our ag. We all know this. First of all, here in the West, 80% of the land used for agriculture, 40% of that is used to raise food for livestock, meaning our cows and our chickens and our cows. And if we could just change a fraction of that, that would make such a huge difference than anything. So with agriculture, the water specifically, 40% of the water that goes into agriculture goes also into raising food for these livestock animals. The domestic sector only accounts for about 15% of that. So if you think about it, like if all of us decided that we were going to turn off our faucets and, you know, save as much water as we could, that would not make much of an impact as if we started with the agriculture side. So that's another reason why. So insects have proven to use way less water. It takes about 1 gallon of water to raise a pound of crickets. As to cows, a pound of beef takes about 500 gallons of water. So that's just kind of just a little bit of stats so you can kind of, you know, see how dramatic it is.
So what you're saying is that like bugs drink less water than cows? No way.
Surprisingly, yes.
I think that's pretty much what she's saying.
I think another important thing on top of the water issue is the land issue. And not only the amount of land that is required to for cattle and livestock to live on, but also the amount of land that is used to grow the food that then feeds our livestock. And that is a huge issue as we become a more populated planet and we run out of healthy areas to grow food. We're starting to destroy our forests and our rainforests to grow the food that feeds our cattle, and that's another huge issue. So there's a lot of the resources that cattle and livestock demand are really truly unsustainable. We cannot continue to eat in this way, and insects provide a really good and feasible option to reduce the amount of impact that we have on our planet.
Right.
So what you're saying is that crickets and bugs take less land than land animals.
Even more surprisingly, yes.
They're actually called microfauns.
Oh.
So they're very small. And so that's really great.
It's microfauna?
Microfarms.
Farms, okay.
So it's, you know, like a normal farm, microfarm. Actually, where I get my crickets, it's a company in San Leandro in the Bay Area.
That's like right in the middle of a big city.
Yes, basically. It's in a building.
So you can do microfarms anywhere, basically.
Yes, with the right resource, yes.
Okay.
Another reason why bugs are such a great option, because they are, it's a lot more feasible to raise insects than it is livestock. And more people can do that, and especially as we become, as we close our food system loops and try to eat more locally, insects provide a really good way for us to actually consume local protein and local products.
You can practically even do your own microfarm in a bedroom, like seriously. One example of this is like an ant farm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I used to have one of those.
Yeah, and people that do the mealworms right? for the birds.
My mom raises mealworms in her house, and she's been doing so for a long time, and it's really easy, and she loves it.
I got a question in light of that. Is like the San Leandro, like the East Bay, seems really far away to be sourcing crickets. Like, why do you got to go so far, or what would it take to have our, like, insect food production, whatever you call it, like here in Chico?
That's a great question. It's funny that you ask that, because I have, before I did try having my own crickets in my room, didn't work out. Then my friend Mr. Isaac, who's over here.
Oh, I had those.
You should talk about your experience with that.
Okay. So yeah. I learned from my friend Karen right here that one of the main things to kind of worry about when looking into entomophagy is that you need a source kind of from a sterile environment. Like, it might be dangerous to just go out into the wilderness and say, oh, I'm gonna have this cricket and that cricket and throw them in the big tub and that'll be good. No, you can't do that, because there might be like pesticides and herbicides and toxins and poisons and all the other stuff that you don't want. So it seems as though you kind of need to go get your first batch from a farm that is, I don't know if they certify them yet, but at least is known to be a clean environment to source your crickets, and then you can have them. And then I guess I can just go through the process. Karen showed me what website to go on to. I went on there, got them shipped to my place. Got a big plastic tub, put some holes in the top of it, put some, I guess, not chicken wire, but like screen door wire over the holes. And then I found a bunch of egg cartons that they kind of need a place to like crawl into and have a, you know, a habitat, I guess. What's up, Nolan?
All right, so it's like 6:15 right now, or like 6:16. It's time to read you.
Okay.
Youth for Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, a state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Deborah Lucero and Friends of the Arts have been crafting economic opportunity through arts and culture, producing community festivals and events including Oktoberfest, the True North Tour, NorCal Jazz Festival, the Salmon Festival, and more. To learn about Friends of the Arts, visit friendsoftheartsupdate.org. And by Apothecary Options, a compounding pharmacy specializing in bioidentical hormone replacement for women and testosterone replacement for men. More information is available by calling Apothecary Options at 345-7979 or at apothecaryoptions.com. APOTHECARY options.com.
All right, that's Nolan Harry, and we're so blessed. We got Nolan Harry's his eighth grade project. He wants to be a radio person when he grows up, and we're mentoring him. So thanks for having him on Youth for Justice, guys.
Thank you for joining us, Nolan. You got a voice for radio, that's for sure.
All right, Stephen, what's
really
up?
Quickly, before we move on, I want to jump back to that question of why we don't have, or what will it take to have insect farms locally, why we have to go all the way down to the Bay.
Sure.
I think, you know, it starts with just education. It starts with outreach. I think many people in the United States and in a lot of Western developed cultures don't even know that edible insects is an option. It is growing, and yes, and there are farms in the U.S., and there are products and companies and restaurants offering insect products, but it's still largely unknown, and most people don't know that they can, and producers have not even thought. If they have, it's primarily for insects as feed for animals, but not too many people are thinking about insects as feed for humans. And so things like this, talks like this, outreach that Karen and I hope to do are going to be really vital in getting us towards having more farms across the country and in other countries. So it really, again, ties back to the beginning, how we started with the need for education. And I think that's what's lacking. And that's what's needed before we can get to more farms, among many things, obviously. But that's a start.
So if I want to start a cricket cooperative, can I hit you guys up?
Definitely.
Please.
I would be more than interested.
That sounds beautiful.
We'll find a clean space outside of San Leandro.
There's clean space. I mean, in Butte County, there's an agricultural area. I mean, there's people that, this would be a good place to get some farms going. And a cooperative, that sounds beautiful. I'd love to hear more about that.
I think the hardest part is the temperature control, because a lot of them, you need to have higher temperature. And that's exactly what we need, so.
It's too cold and too dirty in Chico for this.
Yeah, it's too cold, or I think in Isaac's case, something like that might have happened, like, kind of killed all the bugs.
Yeah.
Or our little crickets.
Oh, you got frozen crickets?
Basically, what happened was I created the box, got all the stuff I needed, got the food and the water. They just need enough water that they can walk in, but that they don't drown in it, because they're known to do that as well. And then just making sure the food doesn't rot. You use like carrots, and basically I was just trying to go with organic vegetables that I researched that they actually eat and are good for not only them, but pass on that nutritional value from what they eat to you. And also even get some tastes. Like I've heard that if you feed crickets a bunch of one kind of food, like they'll end up tasting a little like that.
Right. So that's actually one of like the biggest things that people are struggling to understand, the nutritional value of insects. And it's mainly because they depend a lot on what you feed them. So it will change, like if you are feeding them higher proteins, they're more likely to have higher protein. So there's this word called sequestering, and most bugs do, so they basically are what they eat. So various studies have shown, you know, crickets specifically having such high differences in nutrition, and that's because of their diets and also their life stage. So the metamorphosis, it's each bug has like a different life stage, and I believe that, I don't remember what stage it was, but there's a stage that has higher protein than the earlier stage.
Okay. So yeah, I think one of the main problems that I hit wasn't more the food, but it was more the temperature. It seemed as though the research that I did and the information that I got from you all was that they need to be at least at 75 degrees Fahrenheit or higher, up to 90. And the higher-ish, the better for their growth. So the faster they'll mature into the size that you really get the most meat and like nutritional value out of it. And so what I had them sitting on top of was just the air vent from my heater, which I had a temperature gauge in there, but it didn't seem to stay that hot, and I didn't really want to put much more work and time into it without really doing the best job that I could. So to me, it seems like if you want to do it, it's something that you really got to put some time into and really focus on, but it doesn't seem like it's that hard. It seems easier than like raising a pet almost.
Right, yeah. And I feel like if you want to try first, maybe start with mealworms, because those are way easier than crickets.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. That would be, my mom does it for fun on the side, and she's been doing it for years, and she did not do much research. That's a great point. Start with something a little bit easier.
Okay, like so that. Mealworms is an easy one.
And, you know, not everyone has to grow them. You could also just be an advocate for and a consumer of insects. There's many, many companies in the U.S. that are creating insect-based products. You can be support that way without having to start your own operation, though I highly encourage that and the fun that could come with it.
I mean, have a garden. If you have a garden, why not have an insect farm right there with it?
Right. Why not?
You might not want crickets or mealworms because they will eat your garden.
Well, yeah, you
said that's why. Just kidding.
Sorry. All right. Sorry. So I guess we can talk about the history of why we don't eat bugs in the States or even in the West in general.
So I do have a little story. So we did eat bugs in the West at one point.
Okay.
So here's a story that I found that I thought was really cool. So it's actually Salt Lake City. It's the tribe Ute was known for eating these bug patties. And in the late 1800s, white settlers arrived from the East in covered wagons. And they had no knowledge about the land. So they brought their crops, and of course, their crops failed, and they were starving to death. And the Ute provided them with these patties that were made with berries and crickets. Well, they were they're a type of grasshopper. And so the white settlers found them tasty and made it through the winter, and they did not know that the main ingredient was a katydid, so this grasshopper that I'm talking about. And so what's really sad is that after the white settlers found out that there was a bug inside their patty, they were super upset and they just denied and stopped eating them. And this bug, this katydid that saved their life, is now known as the Mormon cricket, which you probably all know. It's common in your gardens.
So we, I guess, Westerners who came to America were saved by bugs, but once they found out that they were bugs, they were like, nope, not here. And and they're still around now. And like, do you know of any farms that farm those?
I do not know of any farms that find the specific katydids. I know that in Salt Lake City, there is a company called Chapul, which I think that's one of the reasons that they started selling their bars and making them out of crickets.
Okay.
I actually have another kind of bug that is safe to eat and can help you survive. Ants. They're everywhere, easy to catch, and actually taste good. They're also really easy to find.
All right.
You can find them anywhere at any time. They're sort of
ubiquitous.
Yeah, that's right. All right, so what you'll need to do to catch these bugs is you need to scan the ground, and you're sure to eventually find a skittering battalion of ants. They march in straight lines, so you'll lead them straight to your home. So they'll lead you straight to their home base. One good way to collect them is to hit an anthill or other habitat, like a rotting log, with a stick a couple times. Then put the end of the stick in the opening. Ants will rush to bite the stick, dunk into a container of water. Then you dunk into a container of water, ideally the container you want to cook them in. Repeat until you have like a few hundred to eat.
Thank you, Nolan. Another bug to eat.
Great. So going back to why we're not eating bugs, so I think it's all the bias, you know, and it's associated with a lot of times people associate bugs as primitive or something that's back from hunter-gathering times. And I was actually living in Thailand and eating bugs every single day as part of a project. And part of my project was to get as much people to eat them and kind of study their behaviors. And most of the people that I was around were Westerners.
Okay.
So I found out that most of them, you know, they were willing to try it once, but they just couldn't get over the yuck factor. This is just not normal. You know, bugs in America or in the Western world are seen as not very clean. You know, you think of cockroaches, you think of mosquitoes, which are vector-borne. So they associate all the horrible negative things with bugs. And I guess that's a huge reason why people haven't been able to get over the yuck factor.
Yeah, I mean, we see them as things to be killed. Anytime you see pest killing commercials, all the trucks driving around trying to kill your insects, pesticides. We just, in the U.S., that's been ingrained in us that bugs are things that are bad, are scary, are dangerous, and we want to kill them. And that does play a significant factor, I think, into why we don't eat bugs. But I actually would be curious to kind of see, because our neighbors down south in Mexico, as our guest here was talking about, are very fond of bugs. It's a common practice. They enjoy them. It's almost like a delicacy. And I'm just curious what you might think is kind of leads to that understanding and that excitement towards bugs. Whereas up here in the U.S., we think it's disgusting. Is there anything that you might kind of had conversations you had, or like any insight that you might lead to why they are so fond of them?
Yeah, so it's a little more complicated than just like Mexicans like bugs. Yeah. People in the U.S. don't.
Right.
And there's that element of like the like Westernness and the modernity that comes in with that. And so like bugs, not all parts of Mexico eat bugs, or like Chapulines is popular as like in Central and South Mexico. There's different kinds of like worms in Oaxaca that people eat. And it's seen as kind of like a curiosity. Like I ate a lot of Chapulines because I had some friends with a quesadilla stand, and it was like an attraction that people would watch me eat like Chapulines tacos. So they just like give me tacos, you know, because people are always interested in that. So it does have that element as a curiosity, but at the same time, it's like a traditional thing. So like an indigenous thing. And so a lot of people, especially people from like middle class backgrounds, would we say like they're like whiter people are more likely to have that kind of like reflex of like how gross, you know, that what it goes along with things that are like kind of Indio, which can be like a curiosity, kind of cool, tropical, but not something that you be like proud of in your like clean middle class existence. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, see,
like this brings up one of my jobs that I've had, which was at the Gateway Science Museum. Like one of the biggest things that they sold in the museum was like little gimmicky candies with scorpions in them or stuff like that. And it's so othering and like, This is a special thing. It's not something you should do all the time, where that's really not helping sustainability, which is what I look at when I think about this topic.
Right. And I mean, I think, one of the huge problems we have is the fact that we associate meat and eating meat with luxury and status. And we know that the wealthier individuals in societies become, the more meat they consume. Unfortunately, we've attributed consumption of these products to your status. And that's a really ingrained cultural thing that is hard to tackle. But it's something we're going to have to try to do and try to change the narrative and the perception of first shifting away from what you eat and your status. That should never be a thing, but that's unfortunately the way we kind of do things. And that's a problem in itself, but I think you got something.
Well, I was going to say, like I mentioned earlier, that people carry around buckets and sell Chapulines in the street. A lot of people that are street vendors like that are like raised in like indigenous backgrounds from outside the city and come in for work, just like whatever they can get. So they end up selling stuff on the street and like barely making enough to survive. So on like the other part of that, like especially in like southern, like touristy parts of southern Mexico, there's like indigenous women selling their like tapestries or their call them in English, but like little blankets, you know, that are like known for their style, because people come there like, oh, like Chiapas is so cool, I'm gonna like buy some neat indigenous things. And that's kind of where like selling crickets in the street sometimes fits in. Well, it's like more in like rural areas that people who are like using them as a significant calorie source, but otherwise it's a novelty, you know.
And do any of you know, do they have farms down there for this, or is this like something they go hunt for? I wonder.
It's entirely small scale production. Okay. Like they put traps out. Some people raise them in little cages. From what I know of the process, and I have some friends that like did it, they kind of explained it to me. You just need to like, you'll like catch them with these little sticky traps or something like that. Cause they're just at some months of the year, they're hopping all over the place and they're colorful. These ones down there. And they capture them, you like leave them for a day so they like don't have any waste left in them. And then they like fry them up. Yeah, in those cases. Yeah. But it's all, as far as I know, it's all just like backyard kind of production.
Okay. And so we have some, what are these?
These are Chapulines from Mexico.
All right. So
from Oaxaca specifically.
Right on. So I'm going to go into a little song by Alice in Chains from their Jar of Flies album. That's the tie-in. And then we'll come back and try some Chapulines. All right. This is KZFR 90.1. Listener supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. The opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. We'll be right back. Thank you all. That was Alice in Chains, I Stay Away. This is KZFR 90.1 in Chico, California. We're back in studio with Guillermo Mash, Addison,
the legendary Guillermo Mash,
Steven, and Karen. And we're talking about and about to eat some chapulinas, which are crickets straight from Mexico.
Grasshoppers, actually.
Grasshoppers. My fault.
We were kidding in the studios. Guillermo here. I'm going to eat one of these. I've never eaten a bug like gone. I want to eat a bug. But without putting my glasses on, I thought it was chocolate.
So. Yeah.
Nolan, are you going to join us? Are you okay to join us to eat a bug?
Maybe.
Okay. He's thinking about it.
Okay. Yeah,
but I'm going to chapulinas. I'm going to have my first chapulinas.
Live on air.
I'm going to get close to the mic in case it crunches.
Oh, God.
It does crunch.
You can hear me crunching, man.
These have been seasoned, as I understand it. What seasoning am I?
That's actually the normal season that they use in Oaxaca. It's,
yeah.
I don't remember what it's like. I know they use some kind of adobada.
It's oily. It tastes
lemon,
very oily.
Adobada, and I don't know if they used onion, but I know adobada and lemon is one.
One thing I could say is, Karen, this does not taste like chicken. It does not taste like chicken.
Good. It's not supposed to.
Well, so Alice is going to have some chapulinas?
I think Nolan looks a little hungry. Nolan looks hungry.
Sure. Yes. Nolan's going to do it.
But I'm not going to let them hear me.
All right.
Thank you, Guillermo, for being brave.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, look at that. Yes.
Not going to lie.
That's
like Lay's.
Tastes like fish.
Like Lay's. That's beautiful. Mm. That's the kind of testimony we need.
Hey, you can't have just one.
Right there.
Not going to try this again.
Not into it.
All right. That's okay.
I think they're delicious.
It's an acquired
taste. Some lime on it. Yeah.
I haven't tried one yet, so.
Tastes like an oily fish.
Well, Isaac had some of my chapulines tacos a week ago.
Oh, yeah.
Were
these the same ones?
Yeah, they're the same.
Oh, okay.
So you have had them in
America. I have had these, but they were in a cooked, warmed method.
They were in a blue corn tortilla. Mm-hmm. And then they were just warmed up. And then there was avocado salsa, cilantro, and pico de gallo.
Yeah. All right, here we go. That's got, it's like a little red thing. It's about the size of a pinto bean, let's say. It definitely looks like a grasshopper. It's pretty cool, though. I'm actually a vegetarian most of the time, but I make exceptions for a few things. I'll eat like crickets and other bugs and fish that I catch and maybe hunted food. So here we go. Salty, definitely like definitely a snack food that instead of like corn nuts or something very processed, I'd rather do this because, I mean, it's as whole foods as you can get. It's got that nice little zest of the lemon and the onion, a little kick maybe. It tastes like, like a salty snack that I'd enjoy.
Oily.
I feel like they'd go good in like lasagna.
Oh, wow.
It's probably never been done before.
I've only had them in like Mexican styles. Now the crickets, those are the ones that I throw in. Whatever, cookies, baked goods.
You could prank your little brother by putting in his lasagna or his spaghetti or whatever.
Yeah, he's going to get big and strong.
Heck yeah.
Still, he'd be surprised by the taste.
Thank you for eating bugs with us, y'all. That's a big step.
Being open-minded and going for it.
Really, that's,
we're going,
we
going
need that
for
kind of open-minded bravery. And it starts with things like this, so I appreciate that.
I didn't really mind it until the foretaste when I was just like, oh, God, I'm just never trying this kind of bug again.
Maybe the flavoring was what you didn't like, because it was pretty, I tasted the flavors more, because I've had other cricket foods, and especially like the cricket flour that I've had cookies made with, I couldn't taste a bug taste at all. Mm-hmm. It tasted like a chocolate chip cookie.
And yeah, it's so cool, Isaac. I'm sorry. Because you guys, the mission, I'm looking at the mission statement for KZFR, to enlighten entertain, inform, and educate our listeners in support of community, a community of insects. Huh?
Beautiful.
Right. It is.
What we're trying to do.
Thanks. Thanks for right on the money here.
Heck yeah. Thank you for pointing that out. It is a wonderful mission that I'm happy to be a part of trying to fulfill that.
Mm-hmm. So we've talked a little about how we can definitely bring this way more locally through collective community micro farms. Do you have any suggestions where people can find out more about this kind of stuff? Like a specific vendor if someone wants to get live crickets to start their own micro farm?
Yeah, I believe Armstrong Crickets did a good job of telling, you know, it sends you like a lot of crickets and cricket eggs, whatever you prefer. And then for raising your own bugs, that's a good way to start.
Okay.
And now if you're just looking into consuming them, I would recommend Tiny Farms in the Bay Area just because they're more local. Mm-hmm. They're in California. And I know the guy and he's super cool. And also they teamed up with the stadium. Where is it? The Oakland?
Mm-hmm. The Oakland A's. In the Raiders stadium.
And they sell what are called Oaktown Crickets. And they're just seasoned in a little pack. And instead of having popcorn at the game, you have little seasoned crickets. So it's super neat.
God.
Yeah. And they're really good.
All right.
The bug revolution Nolan is coming.
Nolan, you got another underwriter for us?
Well, yes. And now I'm going to tell you about another kind of bug that you could eat that All could right. help you survive more, longer.
Cool. All right.
Youth for Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Garden Connection, now located in Oroville at 1740 Feather River Boulevard, and open 7 days a week. The Garden Connection has everything you need to become a successful gardener, specializing in organic soils, fertilizers, organic pest control, hydroponics, greenhouse supplies, and more. The Garden Connection is your one-stop shop for all your gardening needs. The Garden Connection's number is 530-342-7762. And by White Glove's House of Fire, ensuring a safe and inviting hearth in your home for families to gather. House of Fire sells, installs, and maintains Komodo grills, wood, gas, and pellet stoves, including Lopi and FPX hearth products, creating a clean, beautiful, and hearth-warming gathering place. Located 3128 Thorn Tree Drive in Chico and at whitegloveChimney.com.
Thank you, Nolan. You just heard from Nolan Harry, who's our 8th grade mentor for his class project. Thank you, KZFR, for this platform. Huh?
Uh-huh. Hashtag KZFR, am I right?
Right on. All right. So let's get into how you all in the entomophagy arena can best reach out and really focus on the message to youth on why it's really important to start thinking about and even start eating bugs as a main source of.
Right. So, as we all know, our population is increasing, and this demand for meat that we have now with population increase cannot continue. It's not sustainable at all. And crickets and bugs specifically are a great form for that. And specifically for global warming and all that's going on, you know, it's super important that we change our agriculture practices and specifically where we're getting our protein.
Absolutely. And I think this is what Karen just talked on is knowledge and is knowledge that I think ought to be shared with our youth. And I think a good way for that to be done, you know, people getting into classrooms, I think it really should start with people like us and other advocates for bugs, you know, potentially getting into classrooms and after school programs, talking to kids. Teachers that are receptive, welcoming us, maybe at assemblies where Karen and I are going to be presenting at This Way to Sustainability Conference at the end of this month, which is hosted at Chico State. It's a just convergence of academics and staff and students from across the state, as well as out of state, coming to talk about sustainability solutions. And so we're going to be talking about bugs as a sustainable food source. So things like that could also be a good way. You think getting on KZFR, getting on the Youth for Justice program, getting on the radio, working social media. Obviously, that's where a lot of kids are today. Spreading, kind of trying to get things go viral, whatever it is. I think those are all platforms, I'm excited to see what other ones there are.
Even also just cooking for your friends. I think that's one that's convinced most of my friends. I would just have, cook a large pan of crickets and then make tacos and then have about 15 to 20 friends come over. And then, maybe there'll be, five of them who don't like them. But most of them like it and always come back for the next bug feast that I have. So I'm pretty known for having these bug feasts. I've been having them for a while, and I think that's what's been working the best for me. And also finding different ways to disguise the protein, because a lot of people are not into the bugs. It's the legs. They're creeped out about the legs. I'm like, oh no, there's a leg, my tooth. It just sounds gross to them. So I have I call the crickets are for my not so brave ones, and then I'll have a whole cricket for my brave souls that are down to just pop a bug in their mouth and enjoy it.
Heck yeah.
What if a local restaurant wants to add some chapulines to their menu? Can they contact you all?
I was actually thinking about that. I know places where we can get them from Oaxaca. I just don't know. I know a lot of people here, if it's local, it's better. You can't get chapulines here. They'd have to be from Oaxaca. So I think they can definitely do that. I think they can contact me and I can connect them with my hookup.
Heck yeah.
That's a great idea. Let's get some Chico restaurants to serve some bugs. I like that.
So, the coming together with your friends, going on to campuses. I know, just for those who might be tuning in for the first time ever to this program at least, I'm a substitute teacher right now, and I'm going to have these two in my class to teach the youth about entomophagy. And I think really I'm going to have y'all bring in bugs. We can even do cooking in the class if you think that's workable, but really just putting it in front of people, I think, is the best way to really engage this topic. Because if it's oh, watch this video, they might watch the video and talk, that's a cool idea.
Talk is cheap.
I don't know.
Try the bugs. You're right.
Yeah.
Get him in and get him into it.
Yeah.
And go, jump right in. And
yeah, get him to do the practice.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got one more bug for us there, Nolan?
Yes.
All right.
Number 3 on the list is termites. Termites are a great source of protein, and since they live most of their lives buried away in wood, they are less likely to carry parasites than other insects. Mature adult termites have wings and can fly. The other stages, larvae, workers, soldiers, nymphs, queens, etc., can't fly, so they're easier to snag. In some cultures, termite queens are regarded as a delicacy. Who knew you could eat like royalty while eating insects?
Heck yeah. Alright, thank you very much, Nolan. Any of you know any restaurants, even anywhere in the state, that actually do serve bugs? Yeah. What's up, Addison?
I know there's some place around Bakersfield on the 5 that sells there's cheddar cheese on some maggots in a little bag. Mm. Yeah. I can't say where it is. Mm-hmm.
I know the Bay Area has some restaurants. I'm blanking out on the names right now, but my friends, usually people that see bugs anywhere else, will snap a picture hey, I'm eating bugs here at this restaurant here. I'm just that's amazing.
Is there a number on I know there's the savings as in gallons of water for raising crickets versus raising cows. Is there money numbers though, how much it costs per pound of crickets versus per pound of cow? And I'm wondering if it's also locational perhaps too, because if it's not a local thing and it's more a novelty thing, then novelties raise the price. I've done my own advocacy around the hemp plants and how you can make clothes and even eat food. but hemp seeds are a lot more expensive because it's been illegal to grow hemp in the United States forever. So you have to ship it in from other places. So I'm wondering if it's probably that kind of same market where it's just not around, so it's a little more expensive than it probably should be.
Yeah, actually, it's very similar to that. So specifically in the U.S., it's not very common. And you also, farms, they're like tiny farms, the farm that I get my stuff from, they definitely are supplying a company that's making dog treats out of crickets. And their bugs, so they have all their bugs right there, and they have a high price because there's not enough supply to meet the demand here in the U.S. And in Thailand, when I was there, you know, you'd get a bag for like 50 cents, and it was great. And also, it's easier to grow there. But mass production growing of crickets and bugs is not heard of yet, and that's something that is still been working on. And the FAO, the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, has been working on that because they realized how the potential that crickets have as a sustainable protein. So they're working on how to do that. And the Netherlands is actually a leader in entomophagy.
What?
They have like a whole university dedicated to it. And they're just creating tons of universities and all of these agriculture techniques on how to raise crickets and bugs sustainably and in mass quantities. And it's something that technology, we will get there. We're not quite there yet.
Okay. So like, in the States, does FDA have any guidelines, and is it on a agriculture level, or is it a food processor level, or what are they focusing on? What do you have to worry about? Is it like the Food and Drug Administration, or is it like the Department of Agriculture that you have to deal with, or probably both, maybe health, and I don't know. Like, is that a...
Yeah, so it actually is both. You're right.
Okay.
The FDA, because if you're going to sell it to human consumption, then it has to be FDA approved. And then the other reason that you have to get involved with the agriculture depends on where you're having it, because these could definitely become pests in certain areas. So you have to be very careful of how you're raising them and that you're containing them.
Okay. Well, that's a lot to think about. Is there anything else before we wrap this up tonight?
Yeah, I just wanted to tack on to where people can get bugs. So it might be a little bit difficult for people to find insects in restaurants near them, but there are a lot of companies selling insect-based products in stores. So things like protein bars and chips and protein powders, those are being sold in a lot of stores in California by companies like Exo, who makes protein bars, and Chirps, who sells chips. And both of these products are derived from, or have cricket flour as one of their products, or as one of their ingredients. So that might be a little bit more accessible for people around this state and even across the country. And obviously, there's plenty of bugs that can be bought online as well. But I would check out some of your local co-ops or health food stores, and you might find some bug products there.
All right. So do you want to give us a little plug on when that sustainability conference presentation is going to be and where it's at before we head out of here?
Yeah. So our presentation is on Thursday, March 28th, and it's going to be at 10 a.m. at Chico State's campus.
BMU.
BMU. I'm not sure the exact room
you
number.
You can find out in the entrance.
It'll be on the guide for the conference. So check us out there if you can come on out. We can have some really fun. It's going to be interactive. We're going to have some samples of different kind of products, some that I mentioned, and get a little bit more into detail into why insects.
All right. Well, thank you, too.
I just put it in my calendar, Isaac.
March 28th at 10 a.m. at the BMU on Chico State's campus.
And it's free?
Correct.
No.
Oh.
You get tickets on Chico State's website.
It's free for students, affordable for community members.
Yeah. All right. Thank you all. Thank you, Nolan. What's up?
So
you got one more thing?
This has been KZFR 90.1's Youth for Justice Hour.
All right.
Thank you for listening, KZFR 90.1. Power to the people, baby.
Power to the people. All right. Thank you all. This is the Mosquito Song by Queens of the Stone Age to get us out of here.
Thanks,
peace out, y'all. Youth for Justice, KZFR 90.1.
Hello, hello.
sun is hot, mosquitoes come and suck you.